This is Haystack Health Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. Well, you've been hearing about Colorado Eye Consultants over the last few months since I did my cataract surgery with Dr. Fish, and you've heard him on the show. You've heard their practice administrator, Lori Jessen, on the show. And now we're going to work through the team here at Colorado Eye Consultants. And it's my privilege today to have Dr. Ameya Naravane with us. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So we were visiting a little bit before we came on air. You're new to the state of Colorado.
I am, yeah. I moved here back in July, and it's been great. My wife and I moved out here, and we love it. It's just a beautiful place to be.
It is. And where were you from?
Yeah, so I'm from Minnesota originally.
Minnesota, okay.
Yep,
well,
yep.
Dude, you gotta love Colorado.
That's right. This winter is it's exceptionally nice. It's been a big change from what I'm used to.
Boy, and it has been very different this winter for us. It's not normally in the 50s and 60s all the way through Christmas, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an unusual winter for us, too. But I moved here from Dallas in 93, and so I was used to the heat and all the things. But, man, you will find overall this is a beautiful, beautiful place to live.
Yeah.
And so much to do.
There's so much to do. And so nice to be outside and, you know, be able to do things all the time. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Colorado Eye Consultants. Let's start out a little bit with your background and kind of what led you to this field. Whenever I've done interviews with doctors especially, I'm like, look, you guys are smart enough. You could have been anything you wanted in the medical field, probably what you chose. So kind of what made you choose this area of practice?
Yeah. As a glaucoma fellowship trained ophthalmologist, we go through medical school, residency, and then fellowship as well. And when I was in medical school, I was, I didn't know much about ophthalmology. Ophthalmology is something that's covered in medical school, but not something that a lot of people get exposure to. But I had a couple friends who were looking into it at the time, and I decided to take an elective because I just wanted to explore the field, and I did an ophthalmology elective, and I fell in love. I think the things that are amazing about the field is that it's a very visual field, of course.
Sure.
And you... people always say that the eye is a window into the soul, and I do think that's true. We can see a lot of different diseases in the eye and be the first one to catch it before it affects other parts of the body, such as, you know, blood pressure being elevated, hypertension, diabetes, cataracts. Of course, we can see how all those things start to affect the vision. And I thought it was really cool to be able to have that unique set of expertise that other physicians or other people in the medical field didn't necessarily have. And when I spent some time in the operating room, I fell in love with cataract surgery. Patients are always really happy the next day and are so excited to try out their new vision. And it was such a rewarding field from that perspective for me.
Yeah. I tell you, most of my medical procedures have been orthopedic, but from neck fusions to knee replacements, a lot of knee surgeries and hernias and stuff. The cataract surgery, not to get off topic, was the easiest medical procedure I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And I will have to say, is there some anxiety a little bit going in? Because it's your eye.
Yeah.
You know? But it was so simple. And literally, when I walked out of here, the sky was bluer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's hard to explain to people of how easy it is. And then, boy, the results are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's an incredible surgery, and the technology has only gotten better over the years. So it's something I love doing for my patients, but patients are really happy with it. But during residency, I kind of started to spend a little bit more time with the glaucoma service, and I really started to appreciate glaucoma as a specialty, and working with patients with glaucoma. So during residency, we spend time on different subspecialties within ophthalmology. A lot of people are kind of baffled by that because you think of the eye as a small organ, but there's so many subspecialties within it, like cornea or glaucoma or retina. And when I was on the glaucoma service, I really loved the fact that as a glaucoma specialist, as a glaucoma surgeon, you spend so much time with your patients, and you get to know them so well over the course of their lifetime. Glaucoma is a really tough disease, and being able to spend that time with the patients and talking to them, counseling them about their glaucoma, about how things are progressing, was something that was really, I could see that my attendings, my mentors in residency really developed a meaningful relationship with these patients, and that's something that I wanted in my career as well.
Right. Yeah. Again, Dr. Ameya Naravine is with us, Colorado Eye Consultants. Their number is 303-730-0404. All right, let's get back to a couple of the terms in your training. You said board-certified ophthalmologist. Let's explain what that means.
Yeah, so board certification means that so you've completed your medical school, you have your MD degree, or sometimes a DO degree, and then you finish your residency, after residency, you are eligible to be board certified. And the board certification just basically means you've met certain parameters that is set by kind of a governing body of the American Board of Ophthalmology. That kind of indicates that you are at a certain level, you've met certain qualifications to practice ophthalmology.
Right.
Yeah.
And then when you get into the fellowship trained. Let's explain what that means.
Yeah, so every ophthalmologist has gone through a four-year residency. 1 year is a transitional year or a medicine year where you're doing mostly general medicine or general surgery. There's 3 years dedicated specifically towards ophthalmology and becoming an eye surgeon specifically. And then after that, you have the option of doing either a 1 to 2 year fellowship in a variety of different fields, one of them being glaucoma. So I decided to do an extra year of fellowship training in glaucoma and anterior segment surgery to be able to offer my patients the full gambit of surgical interventions for glaucoma and to really be able to provide the best quality care for my patients.
Right. Now, you probably could have came to Colorado and opened your own practice, something like, you know, why did you choose Colorado Eye Consultants to become a part of?
Yeah, great question. So when I was looking at jobs during fellowship, my wife and I knew we wanted to end up in Denver just to be here. We wanted to explore another part of the country. And when I was looking at jobs, there were a couple things that stood out to me about Colorado Eye Consultants. One of them was that they are physician-owned, which is hard to find these days.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, all these corporate deals come in and buy things out, and then that changes things.
Yeah.
It really does in the quality of care, I think.
I would totally agree with you, and that was a really big priority for me, to find a group that was physician-owned, where MDs, physicians, were making the decisions about the practice and being able to offer the best quality care to the patient. So I think that was one thing. And the other thing is that when I did interview here, I met with everyone on the team, Lori, all the other ophthalmologists and optometrists here, and everyone was so nice. they were truly, you know, I could see myself working with them, and they had a really collaborative attitude, and it seemed like it was a group that you could bounce ideas off of, and really would be a collaborative group that I could see myself working with. So
yeah,
those are the couple of reasons that I was really drawn to Colorado Eye Consultants.
Sure. And, you know, even when I came and did mine, I mean, like I say, you're anxious a little bit, you know, because it's like, man, they're going to cut my... Never Google a procedure and watch a video, because I'm like, I'm not doing that.
I know.
I mean, it's so... But then, you know, and like you say, even pre-surgery, you know, young lady there at the front, you come in the first time especially, and you're like, man, I'm so nervous. And everybody I have found here, and I'm not just saying this, you know, we're here, but I mean, so nice.
Yeah.
And I mean, even walking you back to an appointment, not just walking out in front of you and leading you to a room and say, wait here. I mean, they're talking with you, you know, hey, glad you came to see us. Just little comments, but yeah. You can tell the difference, which is, I think, a huge advantage when it's a physician-owned. I mean, the owners are in this building, okay? Mm-hmm. That's where you can really keep your pulse on patient care, taking care of patients good, and yeah, I think it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Right. Yeah. All right, let's get into glaucoma a little bit, right? And kind of explain it. We've all heard the term all our lives. So is it a disease? Is glaucoma a disease of the eye?
It is, exactly. Okay. So glaucoma is a disease of the optic nerve, and it is associated with high pressures. Now, high pressures means different things for different people. So one pressure may be a good pressure for one patient, but may be too high for another patient. And being a disease of the optic nerve, there is no cure for glaucoma, unfortunately. And that's the part that's really tough about it. So oftentimes glaucoma is called the silent thief of sight because it affects the peripheral vision slowly, year after year, decade after decade, and patients don't usually notice the vision changes from the glaucoma until it's typically too late. And that's why it's so important to get tested for glaucoma, screened for glaucoma, especially if you have a family history of glaucoma, because it really slowly causes damage to the peripheral vision over years, and when that damage occurs, it's irreversible, unfortunately, and we can't do anything to fix it.
Right. And I think a lot of people, hey, I can see pretty good. They kind of blow off getting yearly exams.
Yeah.
And I'm the most preventative guy you'll find. Man, if there's a test or an exam or something, I want to do it every year, you know, just to catch anything. I've had too many friends that have waited too late or when they could have caught something. So it is important to get, like you say, being the eyes are the window, man. You can see a lot of different things, and I'm probably through your career, you've been able to point some things out to some people that helped them.
Yeah.
So an eye exam is crucial, isn't it?
It is. It really is. I think an annual eye exam, like you said, is really important because when you are there for your annual eye exam, your eye care provider is screening you for glaucoma. So they're looking at your optic nerve, they're checking your eye pressures, which are all really helpful things in determining whether you have risk factors for glaucoma and whether you may go on to develop glaucoma.
Right. Is there an age where you normally start to see it? I'm sure there's some exceptions. You've seen it. I have seen it younger than this, but around 50, 60, 70, what do you see in patients?
Yeah. So the most time, there's two kind of big categories of glaucoma. There's open-angle glaucoma and closed-angle glaucoma. Primary open-angle glaucoma is the most common type of glaucoma, and it's typically seen in patients who are 60s, 70s, 80s as well. But glaucoma can affect people of all ages. In fact, babies can be born with glaucoma, something called primary congenital glaucoma.
Oh, wow.
Where they have high pressures in their eyes from birth, and that starts to cause damage to the eyes if it's not fixed quickly. So I'd say it's most common for it to affect patients in their 60s and older, but it certainly can affect people of all ages.
Right. So what if somebody, it isn't pointed out in an exam, if you're saying, hey, if you're seeing this or not seeing this, maybe the better way, in your vision, you need to come in and get tested. What's the symptom that most people complain of with it?
That's the really tough part about glaucoma is that oftentimes patients are asymptomatic. Yeah, and so what we do in the clinic is we check you for glaucoma with a variety of different tests. One looks at the thickness of your optic nerve and compares it to other people your age to get a sense of whether there's thinning and whether that might put you at risk for developing glaucoma. Mm-hmm. And the second test that we do is called a visual field test, where a patient sits in front of a machine that shines some lights in front of it in different parts of their peripheral vision to see if they're seeing those lights. And it basically maps out a visual field that's given to the doctor to kind of assess them for glaucoma. And without getting too technical about it, there's certain patterns of visual field loss that are associated with glaucoma. And based on those tests, we can determine or diagnose a patient with glaucoma. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of, again, goes to the importance of those annual eye exams.
Sure. So you spot it early in an exam. Mm-hmm. What's the first step that you can do then to where it doesn't get worse?
Yeah, great question. So glaucoma is treated with drops, lasers, and surgeries. And we oftentimes start with the drops or lasers first as a way to lower the pressure in the eye. So as I said before, glaucoma is a disease associated with high pressures in the eye. And the only thing we can do to slow the progression of glaucoma down is lowering the eye pressure. And for patients who are recently diagnosed with glaucoma, who have early glaucoma, drops in the laser work really well. But for patients who have more advanced disease, sometimes that requires a surgical intervention.
Right. We've heard eye pressures, and if you've had your eyes examined, years back, a lot of times that's where you're leaning forward, you got your chin thing, and they blow that puff in your eye. I think it's changed now a little bit with some different testing. But what do you look at when we say eye pressures? What are we really talking about, and why is that important?
Yeah, so the puff test is a good way to screen. It's not something that we typically use as ophthalmologists, but the gold standard for checking the pressure is what's called Goldman applanation, where we use essentially a probe that just kind of barely makes contact with the cornea and uses that to determine the pressure in the eye. And the reason that, you know, eye pressure is just kind of like blood pressure, where it helps maintain the shape of the eye, helps allow the eye to get the nutrients it needs from the rest of the body. But if the pressure is too high, that can cause problems.
Right.
Mostly being glaucoma, like I said.
Right. Yeah. Again, Dr. Ameya Naravain is with us. It is Colorado Eye Consultants. You can check out the website at that name, ColoradoEyeConsultants.com. Their number is 303-730-0404. Do you find this more in men or women? Do you see that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It doesn't tend to be in men or women in particular. I think the incidence is about the same. But what we do know about glaucoma is that there is a strong... family history can be a really strong risk factor for glaucoma. So whenever I'm seeing a patient for the first time and evaluating them for glaucoma, one of the first questions I ask is, do you have a family history of glaucoma? And if so, how bad was your relative's glaucoma? Because that can give us a lot of information about how bad your glaucoma may be. Because as I said, there's no cure for glaucoma, but what we try to do is slow the progression of the disease down. And so if I know that a patient has a family history of glaucoma, I'm typically a little bit more concerned that their glaucoma might progress a little bit sooner than someone else that may not have that family history. And so we tend to watch things a little bit more closely and advise for more treatment earlier on so that hopefully we can prevent them from having their vision, from having severe vision loss later in their life.
Right.
There's a lot of really cool research being done right now developing what's called a polygenic risk score, which basically tries to put a number to your genetic risk of developing glaucoma.
Oh, okay.
And so I in addition to asking patients about their family history, one of the things I also always recommend my patients is if you have family members who haven't been checked for glaucoma or haven't had that annual eye exam, I really encourage them to get that done, because again, if it's caught early, we can treat the disease and try to prevent it from progressing.
If someone has it in one eye, or they generally have it in both? Or have you seen it just in a single eye?
Yeah, another really good question. It is common to have it in both eyes. It is also common to have it more severe in one eye than the other.
Okay.
And so if a patient has it just in one eye, I'm very suspicious of looking at the other eye to see if it starts to develop that in the future. But it is it can happen in both eyes, and typically it does.
All right. When should people, and this is just kind of a general question, get in touch with someone like yourself or at least an eye physician? In other words, what's a symptom that if you say, hey, if your eye starts, seeing flashes or you start getting blurred vision and headaches, I mean, when should someone just come to see someone like yourself?
Yeah, I would say if they've been diagnosed with glaucoma by one of their other eye care providers, I'm always happy to see patients for glaucoma. Or if they're here just, it's been a couple of years since they've had their dilated exam and need to get in with someone, I'm always happy to see a patient in that regard as well. But I think patients, especially who had that family history of glaucoma, haven't been seen by an eye doctor, I'm always happy to see those patients early on in the disease, because, as I mentioned, the earlier we see patients with glaucoma, the more we can do about it as well, and the more we can do to try to prevent it from getting worse. As the disease gets worse, our options are sometimes more limited, and so it's always better to catch it early, like you said.
Seems like anything in the medical world, catch it early, you're way better off.
Exactly.
And man, to come and invest in your eyes to get a good eye exam every year, just to make sure everything is good, sure sounds like a good investment to me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think so too.
Well, Dr. Naravain, we appreciate your time today. We're going to be doing a lot of these throughout 2026, but we just want our folks to get to know you a little bit. So, hey, listen, trust your eyes to the folks that I did. It's Colorado Eye Consultants. Their number, 303-730-0404, ColoradoEyeConsultants.com. So Dr. Naravain, again, appreciate you being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.
How much do you need to lower your monthly mortgage payment? $200, $300, $400 or more? As rates decline, take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Over 24 years of saving Coloradans money. Low rates, lower payments, less costs. What makes us different is we listen. As an independent mortgage broker, we shop the top lenders to save you the most. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Want to purchase your next home? You can't qualify unless you sell your current home? Let us show you how to get the down payment out of your current home, qualify for the new one, and then sell yours for the most. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. So you want to buy a home. Let us show you loans that can save you money, low down payment, first-time home buyer specials, fixed rates in the fours with buy-downs. Call for details, 720-895-0500, or apply now at AIMortgage.net. That's Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. Regulated by DORA, NMLS, 217-147, Equal Credit Lender.
560 KLZ, your home station.
Welcome to Medicare and More with Jim Gary, brought to you by Silver Sherpa Inc. Just like a Sherpa guides climbers up the mountain, Jim is here to be your trusted guide up Mount Medicare. With years of experience and a heart for helping people, Jim makes the confusing world of Medicare simple and clear. Each week, we'll bring you tips, insights, and answers to your questions so you can make confident decisions about your health care. Now it's Medicare and More with your host, Scott Whatley, and your guide up Mount Medicare, Jim Gary.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. Hey, before we get out here today, we have several minutes left here. I wanted to get our Silver Sherpa on. That is Jim Gary. Hopefully you've been able to catch our shows on Tuesdays at 12:30 with Jim. He is our Medicare specialist, and we do a show every Tuesday, 12:30 to 1, called Medicare and More. And ran by Jim's office, sitting down with him here for a few minutes, and wanted to get him on to talk about these workshops they do. Folks, these are absolutely free of charge. They are educational workshops. And let me tell you, you do not want to navigate up Mount Medicare alone. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Oh, guide up Mount Medicare.
Yep, I am the Sherpa of Medicare. You know, a lot of people ask me at my workshop, the free educational workshops that Dylan and I put on, a lot of people ask me, where'd you come up with Silver Sherpa? And one of my earliest clients in the business, this goes back to like 2014 or 2015, well over a decade ago, at the end of the process of helping him get, at the time I was not doing this face-to-face, it was at a call center. And he said to me, you know something, Jim? He says, when I was in my 30s, I climbed the Himalaya Mountains. He said, I don't know if you know it or not, but when you climb the Himalayas, you have to hire a local guide that's called a Sherpa. And the Sherpa, you can't do it yourself. You have to do it with a Sherpa. He says, I just want you to know something. He says, Medicare to me was a mountain. I tried to do it myself before I called you, and it was too intimidating. It was just too busy and too confusing and complex. And you turned out to be my Sherpa on what I call Mount Medicare. So he's the one that gave me that inspiration over a decade ago. And I said, you know, at the time I was working for a company, a corporate type job. I said, if I ever go out on my own and start my own business, I'm going to call it the Medicare Sherpa. And I'm going to say, Medicare is a mountain, everything he just told me. And by the time I opened my own business in 2022, about 5 years ago now, by the time that happened, Medicare Sherpa was already taken by somebody in Alabama. So I couldn't brand that. So I thought, well, who is my target audience? Ah, the Silver Generation. Mm-hmm. So I'm the Silver Sherpa. And then I put underneath it, my tagline is guiding the Silver Generation. So that's kind of where the genesis of the name came from.
That's super cool.
Yep.
All right, so these workshops, these are held at local libraries in some different counties around. So I'll let you kind of explain your reasoning with the libraries and different things like that. Because most things I get in my mail, somebody wants to buy me dinner.
Absolutely.
Which that tells me they probably want me to buy something that
night.
I don't know if that's right or not, but that's usually what happens.
It's called social pressure.
Yes, yes.
You give me something, I expect something back.
Right.
So what I give you is a library setting. People go to the library for information, right? The public library is free. So you're going to come out and get free information on Mount Medicare from Jim and Dylan at Silver Sherpa. And what we do is we have workshops that we hold all throughout the month. There are evenings after work, because most people are working, or Saturday morning.
And some of them are 3:34, 4:30, early, later in the afternoon, so you can leave work early. Others are more after work at 6, and then the Saturday one's always in the morning. So there's plenty of ways for you to fit in a workshop within the confines of your busy life if you're still working. And at those workshops, we give you a folder of information, including a 12-page booklet that goes over Medicare A, B, C, and D, supplements, advantage plans, drug plans, and also the rules and regulations of when to sign up for Medicare, how to sign up for Medicare, and is it even mandatory for you at 65? So by the time you're walking out of there, it doesn't matter whether you're new to Medicare tomorrow or 5 years from tomorrow. You know what you need to do to get the kind of the process started, and it's free. We don't sell it. We're not allowed to sell anything. All workshops like this that are held publicly for Medicare have to be registered with Medicare. They have to give you permission. Okay. And when you register them, you can either register them as a sales event. Hey, I'm going to be selling stuff left, right, and center, which you're allowed to do if you register it that way. But if you say, hey, this is informational, you can't even mention an insurance company's name. It's that generic. Mm-hmm. You can only talk about the basics of Medicare, and that's what you get. It's non-threatening, and it's jam-packed with information.
Right. Now, here's what you need to do. Go to Sherpa123.com. Click on their events tab there. You will see the list of the local libraries around where they're doing these. You pick the one you want to come to. And then you sign up for it. All right, we need you to sign up. Seating is limited. Again, these are library rooms. And plus, they've got some information for you. They want to make sure they have enough of that ready for you, the table set up and everything all for you. And if you have questions, you can call them at 303-865-5534. But I want to get Jim on here just for a few minutes just to maybe let some of the folks know on Mondays or other Wednesdays, Thursdays, or Fridays, whatever day we have a few minutes, I want to let you know about these workshops. Jim, you know, 2 or 3 minutes here, but I was asking on a previous show, if it's possible, you do recommend married couple try to come together for this because it's a lot of information to digest.
Yes, and people hear things different ways. Mm-hmm. So if just one party comes, it's the old game of telephone, right? Yeah. So you get home, if you came alone, and you go home and try to digest it and then talk to your spouse about it that didn't go, you're not going to get what we told you. Mm-hmm. And when you open the booklet and she starts going, she's not going to understand what the booklet really says. It might as well be in Greek if you didn't hear it. So yes, we have a lot of what we call trailing spouses, right? Mm-hmm. Very few spouses are the same age.
Sure.
So generally the spouse that wants to come out as the older one that's going to go on to Medicare sooner, and there might be one 10, 15 years later, a younger. I don't care if you're in your 50s. Go with your older spouse. Hear it. Understand it. Because keep in mind, your older spouse may have some, you know, memory issues mm-hmm. as they age, even before you're on Medicare. So you want to be the stabilizing force to say, hey, let's make sure this is getting done right. So there's a lot of great reasons for that. Hey, I wanted to mention one other thing.
Sure.
So when you go to the website, Sherpa123.com, look at the workshops and say, hey, they're in Arvada, they're in Lakewood, they're in Littleton, they're in Parker, they're in Castle Rock, they're in Lone Tree, they're in Arapahoe County, they're all over the metro area, but not really close to my house. Okay, the heck with them. No. Call 303-865-5534. We'll jump on a Zoom call and give you a one-on-one workshop.
Okay.
Personally, you don't have to, if you feel it's too far to drive for the workshop, or you just don't like to drive, or you don't have a car. I don't care what your excuse is. We're here to serve you.
Right.
So don't let geography or the time and date put you off. If you need the information, we'll get it to you.
Right.
Okay?
303-865-5534. The web address again, Sherpa123.com. And, hey, join us every Tuesday from 12:30 to 1 for Medicare and more. We'll be back right after this.
Riding an e-bike will make you feel like a kid again. Just try it. Hi, I'm Randy Kranzi, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are a fun way to ride around town. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. We have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Come take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
You're listening to 560 KLZ, your home station.
Welcome to Your Health Matters, sponsored by Integrated Health Systems. Traditional medicine has left you frustrated. You've seen doctor after doctor searching for answers, only to feel more confused than ever. Chiropractic neurologist Dr. Shane Stedman, along with his team at Integrated Health Systems, does the detective work you need to identify causes, not just treat your symptoms. Using a team approach to combine functional medicine with neurology, Integrated Health Systems spends the necessary time with each client to find out what's really going on. Thanks to Dr. Stedman and his team, many clients who struggle with debilitating health issues have finally found relief. Now, Haystack Health Radio proudly presents Your Health Matters.
And we'd like to welcome you to Your Health Matters, as mentioned, brought to you by Integrated Health Systems. Hey, always a free initial consult. Their number, 303-781-5617. Good to have the functional nutritionist with us, Elizabeth Mankey, today. Elizabeth, how are you?
I am doing well, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, we've had a few cooler days over the last few days, you know, and then goes right back up. So I don't know. It's still good weather.
Right.
That's the main thing. Yeah. Hey, we're going to talk about a few things today. And, you know, as I said, as a functional nutritionist, and, you know, every once in a while, I like to reset that and kind of tell our listeners even what that means, you know, as a not just a nutritionist, but functional nutritionist. So talk about that and maybe even some of the training you did for this.
Sure. So my background is actually a little bit different than maybe other functional nutritionists out there. I went to school in dietetics and human food and nutrition. So I've got a little bit of that more conventional or traditional dietitian background, but then I also went into the functional studies when I started working here, and so I would say it's paired pretty well, just having both sides. But yeah, in functional nutrition, one thing that I absolutely love about it, and maybe that we'll see a little bit more today if we talk about some patients, is that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. So when people think about dietitians, you know, it's probably more appropriate to think like hospital setting, medical nutrition therapy. For example, patients with epilepsy, that's a pretty common one, who are on the keto diet. Like, their diet is very specifically regulated to a certain amount, a very specific amount of carbohydrates, fat and protein. Whereas here, we're dealing more so with chronic disorders, and we're using functional medicine to identify root cause and to create patient treatment plans based on a varying number of factors, as we've talked about on probably every show, huh, Scott?
Right, yeah, like, no doubt.
Health history and all that, so.
And, you know, when people come in for different things. Now, if they come in just for nutrition, of course, they'll just come to you. But as they come in to see Dr. Stedman or Dr. Maynard for different things, I'm not looking for exact percentage, but I mean, is 20 or 30% need to have something to do with you as far as, you know, talking about their nutrition with whatever medical condition they're coming in for?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say probably a higher percent, just because of the nature of nutrition and how it plays into all of the different metabolic functions.
Right.
So I see, probably like maybe 75% to 80% of Dr. Stedman's patients, and then maybe like 40 to 50% of Dr. Maynard's.
Right.
And so that even can play into the world of head injuries and concussions, which both doctors will see on a pretty regular basis. But I mean, it's crazy how much like your protein intake, your blood sugar, how these different nutritional concepts play into health, wellness, healing, health optimization, all the things. So for example, actually, while it's fresh in my mind, I just, prior to calling into the radio, was speaking with a patient who is Dr. Stenman's patient, and she is a teenager who was recently diagnosed with mono. And so, you think, well, mono, that's acute. There should be, a medication, and it should be pretty standard. Well, she's also skipping breakfast. And I bring this up because it's a very small tweak, but if in order to be able to produce antibodies, immunoglobulins, to the monovirus, you have to have protein. So if she's skipping meals, her protein throughout the day is pretty sparse, like, she's not really going to have sufficient resources, particularly regarding protein, to be able to mount enough of an immune response to be able to get over it in a reasonable amount of time. So that's an example where we talk about, a small tweak that could make a very big difference.
Right. Elizabeth Mank is with us. Once again, she is the functional nutritionist for Integrated Health Systems, and their number 303-781-5617. All right, today we're going to talk about something that I think affects most of us. And, with our show airing at noon, just walk around your office there and look at everybody and how they are getting through their 2 to 3, 2 to 4 hour. Most people are exhausted. So we're going to talk about fatigue and what we just kind of talked about, how nutrition, affects our whole health system, so to speak, in our whole body, but yet how does it play a role with maybe this matter of fatigue? And so I'll let you kind of set the scene like that, and then we'll talk about a few things with that. And then you said you had a couple of recent patients too we could talk about, so I'll let you take it any direction you would like.
Absolutely. Yeah, so there are a number of different causes, we'll say, for fatigue. And that kind of relates back to what we were initially talking about in this conversation. Like, fatigue, there is no one size fits all for fatigue. I mean, it can be across the board. Like we just talked about, this patient who has mono, like, she's super fatigued. That's more acute. Then I had another patient today who is postpartum, and by the way, a lot of postpartum mamas tend to run low blood sugar, but I know that she's dealing with some pretty significant fatigue. I have another patient who is unable to sleep, and he is feeling super fatigued through the day. And so, it seems like, well, then just have him sleep more, but why is he not sleeping? And then that can go into adrenals or blood sugar or some of these different things. So really, there is a factor to this whole puzzle that is identifying how the parts and pieces of the web all fit and play together to get people back to their root cause. Because if we just say, you have fatigue, here's a diet protocol for you. You should just do this, and it should make you feel better. It's probably not going to work. I'll just speak to this this postpartum patient that I had today. She has been experiencing fatigue through all of, she has three kids, and through all the pregnancies and all the postpartum she's had fatigue, it's just been kind of consistently getting worse. Mm-hmm. And so we've gone through, like we talk about all the time, health history, different like metabolic and neurological and the various assessment forms, the labs, things like that. And then one thing that we picked up on through the labs was a lower A1C and glucose. So when I see that, I'm kind of asking myself, well, what could be contributing factors? There are a lot. But as a postpartum mom, is she making time for her own meals? Is she super stressed by just kind of like being here and there and all over and taking kids to soccer and blah, blah, blah all day? And so then we're kind of looking into what would be a good next step. For her, it was a continuous glucose monitor to see, is this something that, is blood sugar lower through the day? Is it after meals? Is it during the night? And so she actually just started that today. And we're gonna work to understand that better and the variability there. But the goal with that is to say, okay, if this is a low blood sugar problem, then how do we address the low blood sugar? How do we, which one thing for sure for most postpartum moms is protein, because
right.
Oftentimes, give me something quick, give me some sustenance that just gets me through the next hour. And I know this from personal experience, by the way, but there's a component that is, what's going to be satiating and keep blood sugar stable? I know I talk about protein a lot on your show, Scott, but it is one of the most important nutrients for, in general, as we talked about with immunoglobulins, with insulin and glucagon, those are made of protein. Hair, skin, collagen, keratin, all of those different things require protein. The connections between the myelin and the brain, that all requires protein. So protein is super important, but it's also very effective at keeping blood sugar stable, along with fat and along with fiber. So for her, we're going to modify her diet to meet a specific protein goal that I will calculate for each patient, and that's going to be based on body weight, activity level, age, sex, things like that. So that's kind of like our game plan with her. But then what's amazing with these continuous glucose monitors is they can help identify exactly when she is low blood sugar. So if it's after meals, my the changes that I will have her make are going to be different than if her low blood sugar is at night, for example. So those have been super supportive as far as the low blood sugar goes. But if we can identify that it is in fact the low blood sugar, and that's what the continuous glucose monitor can show, then that is an example of how we would address fatigue with that patient.
Interesting. And this can affect any age, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Fatigue can be any age. Well, and I mean, goodness, it certainly cannot be related to blood sugar. I mean, there are a number of different causes for fatigue. So, like, one pretty common one is hypothyroidism, so low thyroid hormone production. A lot of individuals any age can experience that. And it doesn't necessarily have to just be hypothyroid. Like, it can be, there's a disorder called Hashitoxicosis, which I've actually seen more and more of lately, which is funky, but we tend to see things in, so maybe it's not. But that's where individuals will jump way up and they'll go hyperthyroid, then they'll go way down at hypothyroid. It's more of an autoimmune condition.
Right.
Which, I mean, there's a whole nother can of worms, autoimmunity. Like, that can bring on fatigue. So there, yes, can affect any age and can have a number of different causes.
Okay, before we jump into a few things as far as diet and how it affects fatigue, was there another patient you wanted to just tell us about?
Yeah, so I have another patient. She is in her late 40s, and she has been having issues with, well, so she's got some neurological stuff going on. That's going to be more up Dr. Stedman's alley. But as far as what's in my world, she has had gastroparesis for a while. So that's a totally, you know, that takes us then to, what is she absorbing? How quick is her transit time? Is she actually producing enough stomach acid to break down the food that she's eating so she can absorb it? Because I know we've talked on your show before, like, you hear over and over and over, you are what you eat, you are what you eat. And I appreciate the kind of, like, thought, but it's actually, not that simple. It's more so that you are what you absorb. So if there are any stages of digestion that are that aren't working properly, then later kind of like downstream stages will be affected. And that's certainly true with gastroparesis, which is essentially what it kind of sounds like. It's slowed motility, it's paralyzed motility of the gut. So with her, we have been, again, I mean, it can play back into blood sugar. Like if she's not, if her motility is slow, and this is the case with her, she's not as hungry, she's nauseous because she's not digesting food properly, so it's sitting in there longer, it's causing constipation, things like that, that all get her backed up. So she's not eating as much, so her blood sugar is somewhat low. So we're working on that as well. And I guess she's a good example of like, hey, what came first, the chicken or the egg? And right. Like, are there varying causes? Because if we don't fix the constipation, then she's not going to be hungry and she's not going to want to eat. And so her blood sugar is probably going to stay low. So we have to work on the constipation. With something like gastroparesis, that's going to be a little bit harder than just say, you know, someone who ate something funny and they got constipated for 3 days. Like gastroparesis is more hardcore, and it's, I would say, harder to fix. Maybe would be the right thing. So yeah, we've got to fix constipation before we can fix blood sugar. But again, like these things are all playing into then her feeling fatigued. She's having trouble sleeping at night. And I will speak to that just because it's important. A lot of people who are perhaps listeners today, it's helpful to understand like the reasons for why people wake up at night. So this particular patient is waking, I think she said maybe 2 or 3 times, and it's really hard for her to fall back to sleep. For some, that could be that they're anxious and they're looping on certain thoughts, and you know, it's more of that pattern.
Right.
For others, and this is the case with her, she is having these drops in blood sugar, which we found through a continuous glucose monitor in the night that are waking her up, which makes sense because if her blood sugar drops super low, then the body releases adrenaline and cortisol and things to wake her up, to signal to the brain, go find food, because blood sugar is too low. And should be very tightly regulated. So that can wake individuals up. But then again, this is all kind of circling back to this theme of like, okay, why is she not sleeping? Should we, you know, conventional medicine might say, hey, here's trazodone, or here, you know, here's some medication, try this. But conventional medicine is going to look at it from a different perspective and say, why is she not sleeping? What could be playing into her not sleeping? So in this case, it was, again, the blood sugar component. But in general, fatigue can be very tricky. So Is it a lack of sleep? What's causing lack of sleep? Is it, like we talked about, mono? Is it, a digestive disorder leading to inability to eat, leading to blood sugar issues? Like there are so many different avenues, but that's part of the work that we do here, is figuring out this puzzle, figuring out this this web.
Right. And I would tend to bet that a lot of patients you talk to, if you ask, how are you sleeping? I mean, is it rare where somebody goes, oh, I have no problem sleeping, and I sleep at 8 hours a day? I mean, nobody does that, do they?
I'm so impressed when that happens. I'm like, wow, that sounds like a dream. You know, if I had to put a percent to it, I'd probably say maybe like 20 or less. Like 15 to 20% of the time, people are like, I sleep great. There are also, Scott, the patients who are like, I can sleep 15 hours and I still feel fatigued.
Right.
So it can go both ways. But yeah, I would say it's not particularly common for patients to have perfect sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if blood sugar you know, is probably one of the top things we think of with fatigue, then I guess it would make sense. Blood work and a good blood panel is what we need to do first to figure out what's going on with the blood, right?
Yeah, oftentimes that'll be a first step. Most people do not, I mean, unless they're, well, and that would, yeah. So I was just going to say, most people who come in with a continuous glucose monitor, I'm going to abbreviate that to CGM. Most people who come in with a CGM are diabetic or they have high blood sugar. Hmm. Don't typically in conventional medicine give CGMs for low blood sugar.
Right.
But we use them a lot in here for that purpose.
Right.
So, it's been really, really helpful to be able to figure out like where people are at, what they're dealing with, what their blood sugar status is essentially, because if we can get a more robust understanding of that, which a CGM absolutely does, then we can make sufficient changes. So absolutely labs. Of course, like the history, so I have varying questions for understanding where people's blood sugar is at, where their energy is at, things like that. And then picking up on patterns and trends, we then choose direction from there.
Gotcha. One thing during COVID that I heard a lot about, you know, Dr. Stedman and some other medical doctor, I did a show with a guy in Dallas for a number of years too, they brought up vitamin D. And you sent me a few things before the show, and I think it was number 4 or 5 on that list that you sent me there. You mentioned vitamin D. And so that can play a role too, can it?
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of people are vitamin D deficient. So, if your vitamin D is low, then that's going to affect, vitamin D plays into calcium storage and use. It plays into like cellular energy, managing that. It's a major nutrient for a lot of different body functions. But yes, if your vitamin D is low, and that's something that we'll pretty much always look at in lab work, that can absolutely affect fatigue. And it's really common. I mean, goodness, yeah, it's very common to run low, and it's actually one of the easier fixes.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people tend to think, I've got to be in the sun for like 6 hours, right? And it's like, not necessarily. We can give you drops and we can get your D up.
Sure.
So, that one, when that shows up, you're like, could this be it? that one's an easier one to manage. I would say probably like 5% of the time, it's only vitamin D. Usually there's another factor.
Yeah, for sure. Magnesium is another thing you mentioned on this. And, you know, I've seen that a lot. And, you know, I take that as well, but that can play a role. And then I wanted to touch on this because I just had a guy in Sky Ridge Hospital for 4 days because of this. Guy in his mid-50s, good buddy. But dehydration, I mean, that can really, I mean, it put him in where he got E. coli. He got a kidney infection and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, but it started all with dehydration.
Oh, man. That's so rough.
Mm-hmm.
No, true, though. I mean, yeah, so low fluid volume, low water intake is going to lead to lower fluid volume. So you're not going to be able to circulate blood as much, which kind of relates to iron deficiency, which is a whole nother thing we haven't talked about that can lead to fatigue. But ability to oxygenate the various cells of your body. So fluid volume can play a role into that. Heme, the component in iron, absolutely plays a role in that. Even like sleep apnea. So if you have just low oxygen intake, then you're not going to be able to oxygenate the various cells throughout the body, and that's going to affect your ability to think and you know, contract muscles and digest and all of these different things. So yeah, I mean, oh man, that's so rough.
Right, so rough,
but it's like it's a more simple thing ish that I say that I have people using water apps to help remind them to drink water. We're all busy and we're all stressed and we're all doing things, and so it's there. It's there, but it's no fun.
Right. Excuse me. We've got 3 or 4 minutes here, but I want to touch on this. Meal timing, meaning when do you eat and the key times for that. Yeah. You know, we always heard breakfast, most important meal. I know people that eat five little meals a day. I know some that do intermittent fasting and things. So how do you go about figuring what's out for that, for each individual, because we're all so different in how our systems run, how mm-hmm. our digestion system works, all of that. So how do you go about trying to figure out that perfect meal plan, meaning of just times of the day when you should eat and when you shouldn't?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. So kind of similar to what we had mentioned, like with the health history, with the labs, with the various forms, we're picking up on patterns and trends. So one question, if I'm suspecting that someone may be low blood sugar, and again, this goes back to like, how old are they? What's their gender? Are they postpartum? Are they, you know, are they cycling? Are they getting a really heavy period? All these different things can play in. I mean, so that's where the really extensive health history comes in. But one thing that I like to ask patients is, when you eat a meal, does your energy go up, does it go down, or does it stay consistent? Mm-hmm. What we're looking for is energy to stay consistent. If energy goes up, that is a likely cue that they may be low blood sugar, because they're snatching everything that they eat, all the glucose, out of the cells, and it's a quick energy boost. And then often those patients will also say, well, I feel really good energy after I eat, but then I just crash. Like 2 to 3 p.m., I'm just crashing. And so that's another indication of low blood sugar. And then people whose energy goes down after meals, we're thinking high blood sugar, because it's just exhausting to get all the insulin to take the glucose out of the blood and get it into the cells. And that's like an insulin sensitivity issue that will tend to leave people feeling lethargic after meals. Right. So that's just one example, one very small example, sure, of questions that I ask in a health history to help identify who might be low blood sugar. We also have, as we talked about, like continuous glucose monitors, a whole host of other questions, different supplements, trials, and titration, things like that to help us identify it as well.
All right. No better time than now to call Integrated Health Systems. Get an appointment with Elizabeth. Hey, you know, we're just about through summer here and all, and before we know it, we're going to be into the fat storage season with all the holidays and everything. So now is a great time to take control of your health. And you know what? It pretty much all starts with our nutrition and what we're eating. And Elizabeth will be glad to help you. Once again, the number 303-781-5617. Hey, and when you call, let them know you heard them here on your Health Matters, and we would appreciate that as well. Elizabeth, our time always goes really quick, but we appreciate yours, and we'll look forward to our show next time with you.
Thank you, Scott. Enjoy that warm weather.
All right, you as well. That's Elizabeth Mankey, once again, functional nutritionist for Integrated Health Systems, 303-781-5617. Thanks for being with us today for Your Health Matters.
Call Integrated Health Systems now for a free consultation. 303-781-5617. That's 303-781-5617. To book your consultation online, visit integratedhealthdenver.com. Thank you for listening to Your Health Matters. Be sure to join Dr. Shane Steadman live every Monday at 12:30 p.m. on KLZ 560.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.